Hi, you're listening to Talking About Organizations, a podcast about management and organization studies, where we read and discuss foundational texts and key ideas that inform the way we think about organized work today. Talking About Organizations is a community resource supported by our listeners. To find out how and learn more about our program, visit our website at www.talkingaboutorganizations.com. We also thank the Management Learning Journal and the European Group for Organizational Studies for their wonderful support. Now on with the show.
Hi, welcome to episode 75, where we discuss Philip Selznick's book, TVA and the Grassroots, a study in the sociology of formal organization, which was originally published in 1949 by the University of California Press. This is part one, where we will discuss the lessons the book provides on formal and informal organizing. Hi, this is Michael, coming to you from Utrecht in the Netherlands.
Good evening. This is Greta, coming from the beautiful wintry village of Undenäs on the Swedish countryside.
Hi, this is Leonardo, coming from São Paulo, Brazil.
And this is Pedro, coming from snowy Copenhagen with frozen sea and canals.
Oh, wow. We just enjoyed that last week. I was on skates this weekend for since 10 years ago. So that was an amazing feeling.
I'm a little bit jealous of you, Michael. My ice skates are still in some boxes in the Netherlands. If I would have had them here, then I would definitely have given it a try.
You missed out on the ice fun. Well, hi all, and great to have you here. And I'm really looking forward to discussing the book that we're now going to discuss. And let me start with a quick overview of Selznick's book. I think that's important to really get a grip on the text. So we're dealing with a 72-year-old book that is viewed as a classic in public administration and also in organization studies. And before explaining why this is a classic, I would briefly share its content. The TVA book is actually one of a series of works by Philip Selznick, in which he tries to lay out a theory of organization. There is a 1948 article in the American Sociological Review on the foundations of the theory of organization. And the TVA study also serves as a building block for his 1957 book, Leadership in Administration. His study concerns a dense case study of the Tennessee Valley Authority, conducted in 1942 and from 1943, so during the war years. It actually took a while before he got the time really to write up his case study. It's after the war years, and it was published in 1949. The TVA was a newly established regional government agency and unique in its time, which became responsible for the development of the resources surrounding the Tennessee River. Its field of operation covered seven states. Activities include, among other things, land planning, the construction of dams and power plants, experimenting with fertilizers, and implementing policies on flooding and forestry. However, its activities were also controversial, as it threatened the autonomy of local authorities as well as local agricultural practices and attitudes. To achieve its purpose, the TVA opted for a strategy of cooperation with local landowners and other local institutes, such as the land grant colleges. A strategy very much connected to one of the initial leaders of the TVA, who was also former president of the University of Tennessee and had strong local connections. The author goes at length in analyzing the grassroots method and ideology of the TVA, as well as the consequences of cooptation. We come to understand that administrative decentralization is not only a method employed by the TVA to realize its objectives, but should be considered as no less than an organizational doctrine. This doctrine is strongly defended by one group within the TVA, the agriculturists. They develop as a faction with a strong position of power within the organization, shifting policy priorities and ultimately changing the character of the TVA, and in the process weakening its capacity as a conservation agency. Now, why has a case study of a particular regional organization somewhere in the US survived for over 70 years and become a classic in several academic disciplines? I think that's an important question to address at this point. According to a review in Public Administration Review, it is because at the heart of Selznick's project lies the central issue in public administration. Then and now, in what sense can a public agency be democratic? For organizational scholars, there's another angle to the book. It provides a lot of examples of the informal organization. Early on in the book, Selznick states, "The important point about organizations is that, though they are tools, each nevertheless has a life of its own. The book is one of the first to identify organizations as living social organizations. It underscores the importance of understanding formal organizations through its informal structures. And I see Selznick's observations of the institutional environment and its consequences for the organizational character as yet another reason for it being a classic. Over the years, the book has proven to be a foundational text for institutional theory, and it's probably something we will certainly come back to in the discussion. This book is particularly insightful on matters of administrative behavior as well as organizational politics and institutional pressures. As is the case with other classics, this book may be more admired than actually read. And that, of course, brings us back to the essence of our Talking About Organizations podcast. So, I'm looking forward to discussing the book with you all, and there are probably a lot of connections to your own work, and I'm really keen to hear what you think about it.
So why don't we start with an overview of where does this project is situated in history of thought, right? Including some of our previous discussions. So Selznick, as we probably all know, was a student of Robert Merton, right? And he's a member of the so-called Columbia School, which together with Alvin Goldner and Peter Blau conducted these deep field works in bureaucratic organizations, in trying to understand exactly how do they really operate, what are the inner workings through which they attempt to achieve certain goals, and of course in the process revealed, as Michael just said, all these informal, unexpected consequences, pathologies, and all sorts of things that, you know, the whole drama that goes on into the attempt to organize. And the book very much has the same flavor of this the school, because it is very much aspiring to build theory from rich empirical research, right? Following from the famous dictum from Merton of producing mid-range theories. And is in particular concerned with a phenomena in the world, and I think that's also another hallmark of the school and early organizational theory, of the issue of centralization, the extent in which government should be centralized or not, the extent in which it's possible to have democracy with centralization, what are the other possible alternatives. And the TVA is exactly one of these attempts to have the power and efficiency of government with the flexible enterprise of a private organization, right? And trying to decentralize but maintain some of the aspects that are characteristic of governmental bureaucracies. And of course, as Selznick reveals in the book, although the organization is very successful to some extent and is still in operation, if I'm not mistaken, right? It, of course, runs in all sorts of issues, given all the challenges that are presented to it and the different choices that it makes, which then presents particular paths and complicates its attempts to realize its goal.
Thanks, Pedro. That's super helpful to get like this bigger perspective. And indeed, like this, you could see this book as a starting point of a line of research that has extended and is still, you know, people are still researching today on public-private partnerships and the challenges of those, the opportunities, and for what type of issues or objectives this organizational form is a good fit. But also how to unite the different paradigms from a government perspective, or perhaps the different doctrines in Selznick's language of public and the private. And in a sense, perhaps we could unpack a little bit what type of organization the TVA actually was and what other types of organizations we think are similar to it, to kind of give a bit of a Put this in perspective. What is this a case of? And the Tennessee Valley Authority, TVA, was indeed created in the United States. And it had a multifold of objectives. Provide navigation, flood control, electricity generation, fertilizer manufacturing, economic development, And it was in a region that was particularly affected by the Great Depression. And this region, the Tennessee Valley, crossed different states. And I think that's important to put it in perspective. So within the US, you have federal governments and you have the state level government. But the TVA was positioned in between. It was an experiment. This has never happened before. In between crossing different states. So Alabama, Mississippi, Kentucky, Georgia, North Carolina, Virginia. And so we see a public-private organization as an experiment being introduced where you have political pressure from above, from the federal government, as well as political pressure from below, from the state governments. Why was there a reason for the TVA to be introduced? And how did it claim legitimacy? That was a key challenge as it came into being, which I think a big part of the book is talking about how it did that, and this why this grassroots approach came into being.
Yeah, just to mention that in terms of what's the kind of organization that TVA is, or maybe was, I don't know how it's working now, I know how it was by Selznick, but it's a kind of developing agency. The example of TVA, we got some examples here in Brazil of these regional development agencies that the idea was to get close to the site of when the policy was to be implemented. So it's very interesting and how the idea is connected with a bigger question of how can democracy be operationalized, let's say this way. I think this is very interesting that Selznick stressed this in the 1965, because at first sight it's just a lengthy and painful description of a bureaucratic agency, but actually, here's how democracy will not be subverted by planning. And this was a very big question in the 40s and the 50s about how we can develop the regions without taking democracy out of the discussion, because it's better to take decisions and top from the bottom and then see what's happened. So I think it's very interesting how this question is, this question of how we can preserve or maintain democracy in a idea of development and planning and a high level of planning in a certain region of the country. It's a very interesting question to work.
So let's explore exactly this question, right? Because I think we can look into how Selznick tries to answer it. And in terms of substance, you know, the meat of the book is very much an argument, as one can expect, that democracy, and in particular this type of grassroots idea of democracy that the TVA stands for and is enshrined in, is an operative, is an organizational accomplishment, right? It hinges on the apparatus to realize it. And in the process, of course, it shows all the many fundamental ideas about how organizations matter, how they are, his famous expression, recalcitrant tools, and how in doing the work to realize that all sort of unintended consequences happen, how they have to deal with a series of, in his structural functional vocabulary, needs, the most prominent one being dealing with the environment and claiming a social legitimacy, but more than legitimacy, almost like a license to operate, given the unique character of the organization, which create all sorts of challenges in terms of having to work out and bring in support. And then there is the mechanism of cooptation that he talks about, in which some people from the environment are brought in order for it to, you know, gain respect and legitimacy vis-a-vis the surroundings. And of course, in the process, all sorts of things happen, right? The doctrine that they put in place becomes almost like reified and sometimes, you know, a value in itself and so on and so forth. So this is the substance, you know, trying to see the inner workings, the machinery, so to speak, through which the TVA operates and the ways in which it is still able to fulfill its mission, but all the other things that happen around it. And in terms of the structure of the book and how this is presented, I think that unlike other books by the Columbia School scholars like Goldner or Blau, this one has a more historical take, right? It's, of course, very rich, but perhaps because this is an organization that has, you know, been studied and documented so much in previous book and all types of discussions in the government, this seems to be the primary data that Selznick brings, right? All the memos, all the formal discussions that happen in the central government. And, you know, of course, he also uses interview quotations, and it seems very embedded in the reality of the organization. But it's much more a historical documentary type of analysis, very detailed, painstaking detail, right, of all the particular decisions that were taking place, particular issues that certain leaders face, even the background of some of the leaders that may have been the cause for certain action, right? And the book is very much this very detailed tour de force into this reality. At the same time in which, especially in the last chapter, right, he tries to draw some lessons and build some concepts. But it's very much his attempt to show, if you were to look into this very structure of the book, you know, chapter by chapter, he starts by laying the foundation of what is the TVA and what is this official doctrine, right? This idea of grassroots administration, which is very much the way through which the organization seems to see itself, the kind of dilemmas it faces, and, you know, the role, the relationship of the TVA with particular key stakeholders, both in the central government, but also the local ones, the way in which the doctrine has realized and led, as Michael said, to the cooptation or connection with the land-granting colleges, which was pivoted by the agricultural department, and all sorts of positive consequences because it enabled TVA to claim its presence and have a strong connection with the local reality, but at the same time, you know, had all the sort of unintended consequences that he discusses that narrowed its focus, that end up compromising some of its earlier ideas after this structure was put in place, and, you know, the ways in which this commitment became almost like a path dependency type of situation, right? And towards the end, of course, he tries to look back and through all this process and draw some theoretical points about how cooptation happens, what is the type of struggles organizations of this sort and others have in terms of finding their position in the environment, and broader discussions about democracy and organizing.
I think you're exactly right, Pedro. I also had the idea of the path dependency very much in mind when reading the book, and especially the first part of this the middle section of the book, where he really goes into the historical analysis of the TVA and really traces back towards the persons, the positions, and the leadership that is connected to these local organizations, and infuses the TVA from the start with this agricultural perspective, and they gain a foot in the between the door, right? And that develops into a very strong faction in the organization, and kind of forces the TVA towards a very strict way of looking at their grassroots policies, and that's very clear in the book, I would say. There's also this kind of, I mean you touched upon it, that he's very detailed. There's a lot of flesh on the bones, you might say. And that makes it also a very difficult and tough book to read. I mean, I had serious difficulties going through this this book, and I know you had this too. And that's because of this historical perspective, because of all this the details that are involved, the maybe some dry sections on the formal documents that are involved. But then again, there's also something like this eagerness of Selznick to show the informal aspects of the organization. And that's what I really like, that you kind of maybe in this time frame, in the 1950s, 60s, the early days of organization studies, you probably also needed these very flashy books to get more deep and thick descriptions and deep understandings of the inner workings of organizations.
I mean, one quick thing is that I think what is interesting is that the informal here is usually the leaders, right? Unlike, I think, some of these books that we discussed before, is very much the perspective of the leaders more than the people, the operation, like the employees, the daily kind of work, right? Which I think makes it also an interesting analysis.
So perhaps we can complain a little and then go in depth. Because I think the audience deserves to know that when you read this book and you're completely frustrated, you're not alone. This book is so hard to read. It has valuable and very important messages, but it's a nightmare to read. I apologize to Selznick and also to his colleagues. I think there are several reasons. Like when I was reading, I was like, why is it so difficult? And first of all, like there is an assumption that as a reader, you know a lot about the context. It's a classic, so it's in the past. We didn't live that past. We weren't there in the Tennessee Valley. So from what is written in the book, we have to deduce what the context was where this book emerged. And as Pedro said, there were several other books already published on the TVA. So the general administrative audience knew quite a bit about it, I guess, at that time. But we as organization scholars don't know anything about the context. Then second, as a qualitative scholar, he heavily draws on documentary and archival data sources. And I think that's quite unique in this book. It might be more common in other disciplines, but I feel like, for instance, if you compare this to the Dalton book we discussed a few weeks ago, which heavily relies on observation and, you know, everything comes to life. But when you write the same story through the documents that are written about what happened, it kind of falls a little bit flat. And that sometimes makes it a little bit arduous to get through the chapters. And then the third point, often he really embraces this rich empirical description and then theoretical abstraction. And keeping in mind this objective of developing mid-range theories, you really first get the data. And then often in the next chapter, you get the interpretation of what why you had to read all this data, what he actually wanted to tell you. We as scientists today are perhaps a little bit spoiled that we really want the author to pre-tell us what they're going to tell and then substantiate it with data and then summarize how we should read the data to understand what they how they look at the data is the same way as we look at it. And that's not happening here. You know, like the most concise summary of the book is actually page 262, where in two pages he summarizes the book and what the empirical argument was actually about. That's at the end of the book. You know, it's page 262. So I recommend start with the conclusion and then, you know, with that framework in mind, thinking about this doctrine of grassroots, like grasping what is doctrine, what does he mean with it? Starting with this concept of co-optation and like the distinction he makes between informal co-optation and the formal. Like his argument about the organization as an adaptive system with a life of its own. Putting it into context, you know, what is the key contribution of the Columbia School? Well, at that time, they thought organizations were functional things. Functionalism was key in sociology. So showing that not everything is rational and functional that happens inside an organization, that the people that carry out the work and the relations they have, collections or collaborations they have, and the interest at stake of the parties shape what the objective of the organization is. And then go into the empirics and look at the chapters in depth. That will really, really help you. And then you start to see the beauty of the data, like showing the emotions of the people, where their heart lies. And, you know, in neo-institutional theory, like bringing in emotions is like a trend that's being picked up today. And, you know, go back to Selznick because he writes about it in depth. Sorry, this was just my rant. I wanted to give the audience just a heads up. Like, you're not alone in going through this book. It's definitely worth reading, but you do need a little bit of a guide to get through it.
That's great, Greta, because I want to add something that you said, that if you look to this kind of method that Selznick is applying and how things happen along the way of the TVA, and taking, as you said, we have Peter Blau and Alvin Gooden, it's interesting how they have a clear target that is Talcott Parsons, how they are battle against this structural functionalism and this kind of static organizations, because Blau is asking people inside a public organization, Alvin Gudde is on a mine, a gypsum mine, so something that it's a kind of trivia, it's interesting, but only Selznick named his organization, and the only one that say that the real name of the organization he is working, maybe because he's using public documents, I don't know, but it's interesting how the idea is to show that kind of static analysis that Parsons is doing. It's not right. We have to see how things are working. I read in some of these authors, maybe Merton, that sociology is a science of unintended consequences, because this is where it happens, the variability in social life, and it happens here, when not in the formal planning of things, but how people really interact, and how Michael and Pedro said it's in very interesting that in 1949 they here talking about informal organization. That's something that maybe came some years later in terms of real theorizing about that. But I think he did first. It sounds to me that.
Yes, it's good that you mentioned the unintended consequences as a strong angle in this book, and he's actually quite clear where he takes his inspiration from, right? So he mentions in his foreword, he mentions the work of Robert Michels on the oligarchic tendencies, and that's a prime example of unintended consequences, and he's inspired by that work and to follow the informal mechanisms, informal practices within organizations to show how these actually influence the formal side of the organization. And so yeah, I really like that aspect of his work. The other thing that's been mentioned by Greta is the inspiration this book could be also for institutional scholars working nowadays. I mean, we mentioned it in the introduction. It's a foundational text for institutional theory. Selznick states that the institutional environment is a source of the doctrine of grassroots activities in the TVA. So I guess he convincingly shows how the organization actually did not have any real alternatives than a grassroots approach. He views the institutional environment as the source of this grassroots approach, coming from downwards from the constituencies, but also from other public agencies, the federal states, the expectations that are around this whole new agency. For instance, he explicitly states the role of specialist education as a normative institutional force, and I quote him, that shapes and limits the ideas which can be developed by the organization. And today this is common knowledge in institutional theory, right? But at that time, this is, I would say, an insight on the centrality of the influence of the institutional environment, and maybe groundbreaking for that time, I would say.
So we have been throwing a lot of concepts, right? So let's try to list and index them a little bit, because besides these inner workings of exactly how the TVA is trying to achieve this goal, and in the process, all these other things are, you know, getting on the way, I think Selznick exactly is able to draw some very valuable concepts, right? And the first one, as we were all saying, is related to this idea of the doctrine. Right. And how this is, he says, is particularly noticeable in an organization in which is very unique, is striving for being accepted almost when he was describing that, it almost felt like there was a minority stress in his organization, right? The need to almost have like an identity or something like that. A character, exactly. Yeah. So, which I have to say, I have never been necessarily, I mean, I honestly don't know the literature on identity and organizational identity, but the way he shows, you're very convinced, right? That the doctrine organizes. We can even say that's an ideology, right? Because the idea through which they understand in concrete terms what is their tasks, right? What is in front of them and how they should go about deciding who they should include, when to draw compromises or not. You know, this becomes almost like this, this shared concept underpinning how they organize. And I think this is a very important contribution, right? But at the same time, what happens is that because his doctrine is so strong, because, you know, there is this particular unstable situation, what happens is the tools, the concrete organizing, the way in which this is implemented, end up being impregnated with values, right? That's one of his expressions he uses, which is something that, as you all were saying, was revolutionary back then, path-breaking, because it was trying to say that not only organizations are trivial machines, they are not, meaning that as they strive to accomplish the goals, they all sorts of things can complicate, exactly, you know, displace their goals, they can dilute the goals, they have to deal with all sorts of politics, right? But at the same time, when they create particular tools, and, you know, these can be the form of structure, the procedures they have, the strategies they design, they take a life of their own, right? Which I think is very interesting, which is not just the idea that the goal becomes displaced, meaning that the means become the goal, but that the means get almost this, and he uses this religious vocabulary, right? It takes this veneer of something that is special and needed, and it becomes the acceptable way to go about things, right? And that's exactly how the story, the drama unfolds, because what was once possible tool becomes the hammer for all situations, becomes the necessary way, becomes the way in which accept, the way we should bet on. And that has all sorts of consequences. And it's very interesting to realize that although the TVA was very able to exactly have this grassroots approach, there were many people that were excluded from it, from small farmers, right, minorities, and so on, which in part has to do with the way the strategies were put on, the kind of criteria for involving partners were utilized, and the kind of procedures through which they have realized some of their strategies, and so on and so forth. And the problem here is that, yes, people were aware of that, but at the same time, the tools have taken, you know, a particular value. So this, I think, is a very important thing, and it's connected with exactly this idea that comes from Merton of the unintended consequences. And Selznick has an interesting discussion that he says that it's important to look at unintended consequences because that's where sociology happens, so to speak, right? Because that's when you see that you cannot always get what you want, right? That an individual-based explanation is not enough because there's all sorts of things, constraints, forces, structure, you can use any name. He calls unintended consequences. There is something else that makes that you cannot just take a random decision, that you the way the table is set up is already arranged before you enter the meeting, right? That there is already things that come before a certain action, right? And of course, agency is always possible and there is always, you know, possibility of change, but the way things are arranged, right, are exactly these unintended consequences because they are arranged in a way that makes some things more likely than others, possible than others, easier than others, which is this vocabulary, which is exactly, you know, the kind of analysis trying to show. And he uses this idea of commitments, right, which is kind of unique, but it's this kind of, I honestly don't know what would be a better one, but I think it's exactly this kind of the ties that have been built, the structure that has been created, right? This kind of knotting that exists that makes sure that certain things are already in place once one tries to make, to act in the world. Some of them, these commitments have to do, and he lists that in the conclusion, exactly, the institutionalization of tools, right? That some tools have a particular value. They have to do with the social character of the personnel, that some people have particular ideas on what would be expected. Groups have particular ideas. Some have to do with the cultural environment, as we're discussing, some things that are accepted or not, some kind of power interest that exists, right? The kind of commitments the organization has taken vis-a-vis order and then how it has to live up to it. Some kind of imperatives that the organization has that needs to realize, right? So all these are these sort of complicating factors, which are this variety of unintended consequences that are enmeshed as the organization is trying to operate and accomplish its goals.
Thank you so much, Pedro. And perhaps we can unpack some of these unintended consequences we're talking about. And it's a bit of a challenge for me to find the right word, so please jump in. One of them is positioning the TVA in its context, you know, being part of the New Deal, you know, why it got into being and how it tried to establish its legitimacy. It had to find its way between, you know, central federal governments and state level governments. The way it wanted to establish its legitimacy was saying we have to have this democratic, this grassroots approach and be give directly voice to the needs of the people and work with the people in order to implement, because people at central are too far removed. And that was its way, how it gained that legitimacy and how that became the doctrine of the organization. But part of how it implemented that doctrine was in, I believe that's this establishment of the administrative constituency, where they had this Farmers Association, which got, this is like part of the co-optation. It was one of the local parties in the Tennessee Valley, and where they collaborated with through what they call the land-grant colleges. Actually, when as part of the New Deal, the central government also wanted to introduce other initiatives, but this Farmers Association was against them. And because the TVA adopted this grassroots approach, it listened to its allies. And so it went against these other initiatives that the central government wanted to introduce, even though they all were introduced under the same head of the New Deal. So that's what I found a very interesting unintended consequence. Another one I want to highlight is about white supremacy, the discrimination, and the ones that are being left out. So let's zoom in a bit. So when we look at what Michael called the agriculturalists, you know, they worked with the land-grant colleges to implement reforms in farming. For instance, you know, removing certain farms that were in areas that could be flooded by the river. It also involved introducing new ways of fertilization. And so they did studies and they did experiments. And how they did that was working with these land-grant colleges. So instead of doing it themselves, they said, we have to work with them, shape the policy, the strategy together and implement it together. But these land-grant colleges were mostly white colleges. I believe of 67, if I remember the numbers correctly, there were a number of them were black. I believe it was 17 or something, and the rest was white, but they only worked with the white colleges. They left out the black ones. And then thinking about what type of farmers did they actually include in their studies of fertilization, they used the farms that were owned by the farmer. They didn't use the farms that were rented, and so there was a tenant. And often it was the black farmers that were tenants, and so they were not included. And so by adopting this grassroots localized approach, they also adopted the mindset and all the biases and that come with the people that were already there, like their vision of how to do things. So the white supremacy, not listening to the voice of the black farmers, studies where there's complete misrepresentation of the types of farms that are in the region by focusing on the bigger farms and leaving out small ones. And now we have Michael wanting to jump in. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, I mean, this is such an important example in the book. And it's interesting that the TVA kind of, from in the start, it starts as a whole new project, this new endeavor, this challenging organization. And there are kind of ideals of progressive policy, right? Selznick perfectly shows how the unintended consequence of conservatism comes in. It's in the end, and after 10 years of existence, when he studies it, a very conservative organization, actually, that is kind of feeding racial discrimination. And he doesn't really go into depth into this racial aspect because, I mean, that's the time frame of the book, of course. But it's very, very interesting to see this power of the white supremacy and the agriculturist really strongly developed within the TVA organization and making it the conservative rather than a progressive organization.
I think we can maybe understand this as something that's caught my attention in the book, that this, it's a kind of trade-off or dialectics between the ideology and co-optation. and how enters leadership in this conflict to solve things and try to make the organization running. I'm sorry because I'm giving an example of unintended consequences here, but the mechanism is this. You have the ideology of the organization and you have this necessity of cooptation and so I want to stress now this idea of leadership. It's very interesting in the book. Maybe, I don't know if it's an unintended consequence of the book, that the idea that leadership is very strong and very important on all the way the book to keep the moral character or the character of the organization alive. That is a quote that I, if you allow me, that is very interesting, that they say that the role of this leadership, but it's leadership, but he mentions statesman, is the necessity to look beyond the immediate context of current issues. So it's interesting how you have to keep this organization running and you have it save this ideology from their environment, and you have the supremacies and you have all these agricultural problems, and you have to keep this. I don't know if in the end the ideology still holds, but it's very interesting how they put this idea that leadership, that's something that it's the one or the ones that will keep things running and will be in the end responsible for success or failure.
So in a way, I think what you all said is that the book is an attempt to understand how the TVA became what it is, right? The middle age of the TVA, right? In which these young ideologists became settled in a more compromised kind of solution. And co-option is the concept, mechanism, whatever, you know, I think mechanism is a good term, that he uses to explain that. And he defines it as the process of absorbing new elements into the leadership or policy determining structure of an organization as a means of averting threats to its stability or existence, right? And it goes about talking about different forms of cooptation, that depending on whether there is a direct threat, right? There is another claim to power, so to speak. The cooptation might be more indirect, right? Because you don't want to clearly show that you are sharing power, right? But in case that there is a more need, which is the case of TVA, of this basically license to operate, right? Some respect in the environment of the stakeholders, then it can be more formal. And exactly what happens, right? That these grantland colleges are brought in as established partners with memorandums of understanding and, you know, all types of formal mechanisms. And they're brought in as, you know, these selected allies, right? And what is interesting in the process that exactly a lot of the book tries to unveil is that cooptation is a mechanism to share but not give away power and be able to fulfill something, even though it's not completely what you would have wanted, right? So it's like a compromise solution. At the same time, it has this unintended effect that ends up shaping who you can be, what you can do. It brings all these kinds of tools and expectations. And I think that is when, if I may, the unintended consequence language starts to fail, or not to be entirely sufficient, because we were all saying on how Leonardo just said a few minutes ago how the Columbia School and Selznick in particular is writing against Talcott Parsons, right? It's something, an attempt to go beyond the Parsonian functionalism and trying to respond to the question, it's functional to whom and how and when and so on and so forth, right? That is the merchants, again, influence that functional, but in what ways, to whom and in what conditions, you know? So this assumption there is this idealized one type of society and bringing politics and interests into the picture, which in a way adds something to the traditional structural functionalist idea, right? Because it brings a little bit of politics. And as contrasted, I think, to the other books, I mean, maybe Goldner has that a lot, but here I see politics all the way through, right? Because it's very much about alliances and that you cannot, once established, then break out with your allies. It's like an organizational political soap opera, if you will, right? It's not just as unintended consequences of patterns or disembedded ideologies or, you know, social preferences or whatever, you know, routines, but it's very much this concrete, and he shows at the level of the documents of kind of, you know, alliances that have been established and how difficult to break them, and that kind of catalyzes you in all sorts of situations, which I think that is it's departing from what would be the traditional paradigm of ways of explaining social life and bringing in exactly the full range of the interests and politics and how they move the machinery of organizing.
And in that sense, perhaps we can return back to that pop dependency, because I think this is where it fits in, that, you know, the allies you bring on board are going to shape the direction you take as an organization. And even some people that reviewed this book say, you know, this is the reason why TVA actually lost sight of its central values. It let it slip away because of its approach. It wanted to be democratic. It chose certain parties to execute on its mission. But then by bringing these allies on board, they started to co-shape. And that's where the politics come in, that you don't work with other partners. And I guess like here, the whole vocabulary of values, emotions, political interests, like things that we often bring into our analysis nowadays, it's already here in the book.
I agree, Greta. I think it's a good point that you make here, and maybe that's also a good way to finish up this part one of the book.
And that concludes the episode for today. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and found it valuable. If so, please consider subscribing through your favorite podcast service and you won't miss an episode. We also welcome your feedback, so if you liked or didn't like something, or have a correction or suggestion for us, please get in touch via Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, or our website, www.talkingaboutorganizations.com. Finally, we would like to thank some wonderful people for supporting the show. Sarah Audner, Leon Prieto, Hadi Shaheen, Marshall Reiner, Alice Barbosa, Thomas Roulet, Heiko Schmidt, Barton Friedland, Guldem Kara Mustafa, Roberta Bernardi, Marina Timmer, Bernard Hogan, Eddie Hunsinger, Fiona Knight, Peaks Craft, Timothy Paul, Willy Ledon-Virte, Gabriel Van Bunnen, and Clara Lux. It's easy to support the show, and all you have to do is go to our website, where a donations button will greet you. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you for the conclusion of this episode here on Talking About Organizations.